The Arms That Launched a Thousand Ships. A Marvel Cinematic Universe fanfic. Written by Surgical Stainless. Read by Black Glass as Darcy and the narrator.
Berries as Jane.
Pazina as Jarvis.
Chaos Kill as Tony.
Little Red Robin Hood as Steve.
And
Tipsy Kitty as Bucky.
Chapter 1. It was the silence that did it. The sudden silence in the lab set off a tiny alarm in Jane's head, deep in the section Darcy liked to call her survival brain. "No, this is how your brain works," Darcy had proclaimed once. It had been late at night, Jane remembered, and they'd been up on the roof of the lab in Puente Antiguo, commemorating their non-fatal encounters with both aliens and men in black. "You should listen to me," Darcy had said, "because I am a woman of many parts." "You do not have so many parts. You have science brain. That takes up most of the room. And then squished in some random corner are basic human functions brain and survival brain. Those last two are tiny and atrophied, and that is why you need me." There had been some Jägermeister involved. Now, late at night, in New York City, the sudden quiet in the lab drew Jane out of science brain and made her glance around in puzzlement. It was really quiet, and she realized, really late. Not another person in sight, and most of the lights turned off, except where she and Darcy worked. Well, where she worked. Darcy was passed out at her desk, drooling on her notepad with a fuzzy pen clutched to her chest, as if it were a teddy bear. Her iPod was dim in its dock. Having reached the end of its seemingly inexhaustible playlist, it had gone gentle into the good night. Jane allowed herself a moment of awe, and took several pictures with her phone, before she saved her work and stood up to stretch.
"Darce, it's late. You should go to bed."
"What?" Darcy blinked at her, uncomprehending, for a long minute, before she stood too. Yeah, okay." She shuffled off towards the elevators, still only half awake. Alone now, Jane circled the lab, shutting down machines and making sure everything was safe and secured. Darcy had left her phone, Jane noticed. That wasn't unusual. She reached for it, meaning to take it up to the residential floor with her, but was distracted by the sight of the yellow pad underneath it. Was that? It was. A completed Shakespearean sonnet, composed in honor of Bucky Barnes's arms. Jane noted with satisfaction that Darcy had taken her suggestion about the carven, scarred skin rhyme. She was proud of that rhyme. It would be such a shame if Darcy just hid it in a drawer somewhere, never to see the light of day. Jane powered her computer back on and opened a new text document.
"Jarvis?"
"Yes, Dr. Foster?"
"You can keep a secret, right?"
"If the cause is both right and just, I most assuredly can, Dr. Foster."
"Does this count as right and just?"
"May I remind you that Mr. Stark was responsible for my programming?"
"Ah, good point. Is the coast clear?"
"Yes, Dr. Foster. The coast is clear."
It was an innocuous thing. Just a single piece of paper, pinned to the otherwise empty kitchen notice board, with a bright pink pin. There was no signature, no identifying mark. The content, Jane thought, rather spoke for itself. "I sing of the arms of the man, O Muse, who fled from Hydra as the carriers burned, and walks now topless through the tower. The view could launch a ship or two, all unconcerned. One arm, as if from finest marble carven, the other clad in plates of shining steel. To watch strong muscles ripple under scarred skin. No man of wax could match such raw appeal. Those arms wreak wintry havoc on their foes, and lend their steady strength to friends in need. Yet dexterous flesh and sinister metal know, to pluck a flower soft, all chance and sweet. To gaze upon them's bitter sweet delight, I would those arms manhandled me this night. Jane slid Darcy's phone under her door, and went to bed, well pleased with her night's work. Behind her, the paper fluttered in some unseen air current, white and innocent against the gloom. When Jane made her way to the Avengers communal kitchen the next morning, she found a small huddle of superheroes gathered around the table near the notice board. Steve and James looked to have just come back from a run, and were nursing bottles of water. Tony was fully dressed, but in what looked like yesterday's clothes. He held a coffee cup in each hand, and was using one of them to gesture at the mysterious verse. The three were apparently in the middle of an intent conversation. Jane camouflaged herself with her extra-large, astrophysicist stood-in-the-dark mug, and the latest issue of General Relativity and Gravitation, and sat down to watch the show.
"I think we can rule out Thor on the grounds that his arms are bigger than yours,"
Tony was saying.
"Hey,"
Steve protested, ever loyal. But James only nodded, conceding the point.
"Do you think it's Bruce? Does Bruce want to be manhandled?"
Tony asked. All three of their gazes turned inward, as if imagining such a thing. Bruce chose that particular moment to wander into the kitchen, empty mug in hand. He paused, seeing the huddle by the notice board, and went over to find out what was attracting so much interest. Avid eyes watched as he read, chuckled, and turned away toward the kettle. Tony's shoulder slumped in disappointment.
"That was a letdown."
"Doesn't answer the question,"
James mused.
"But I guess we can rule him out."
"Bucky!"
Steve was half scandalized, half laughing. James shot him a wink and a leer.
"Don't pretend you weren't curious, punk."
Tony had returned to the matter at hand.
"Bottom. Is it Bottom? I'd disqualify him on the same grounds as Thor, but also, he just doesn't seem the type to do iambic pentameter."
Clint was sitting at the far end of the breakfast bar, bolt upright with his eyes closed, clutching an entire pot of coffee, as if it were a religious artifact. He had pillow marks on his face, and his shirt was inside out. Jane thought it was kind of adorable.
"It takes a lot of brains to do what Clint does,"
Steve said mildly.
"I'd think you of all people would know better than to buy the simple carny act."
Tony had the grace to look slightly abashed.
"Besides,"
Steve went on,
"our mystery poet is probably a woman."
"And you say that. Why?"
Tony looked up at the notice board again, a little offended at the idea that he might have missed a clue. James' smirk was wicked.
"Flowers."
"Flowers have been a symbol of female sexuality for centuries,"
Steve agreed. His mouth quirked up into a movie star smile.
"Our poet suggested she might like to be plucked."
"Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May."
James waggled his eyebrows lasciviously, and Tony gaped at them both. Hidden behind an article titled "Cosmic Jerk and Snap," Jane stifled a giggle. She could practically hear Tony's illusions shattering.
Said
Tony, trying to regroup.
"So that leaves us with Natasha and, Natasha."
He shook his head.
"We gotta get some more ladies on the team."
The three men turned as one to look at Natasha. She'd come in not long after Bruce, and was now standing at the kitchen counter, making fruit salad with unusual prejudice. They watched as she dissected a banana, knife flashing. Tony swallowed, audibly.
Probably not Natasha, then.
Steve looked amused.
I assume you have asked Jarvis about this.
Of course, he wouldn't answer, the traitor. He said that the cause was, quote, right and just, and wouldn't give me anything.
Tony subsided into a pout. Across the table, James's smirk went up to 11.
Well, who else has access to this floor besides us?
Dr. Foster,
Tony said, waving a dismissive hand in her direction. Jane ducked a little, and did her best to look very intent on her journal, and not like she'd been eavesdropping shamelessly.
And Pepper, of course.
There was a short, fraught pause, in which Tony's face slowly drained of all color, and he slumped almost all the way off his chair.
Oh, God, Pepper?
He buried his head in his hands and moaned.
Oh, she's going to leave me for the $6 million man over there.
Steve tentatively patted him on the back a few times.
I mean, I've got nice arms. I hammer shit all the time. I've got a robot arm. I've got two robot arms. There's a whole suit. She hates the suit. Oh, God.
Easy there, Stark,
James interjected.
I've never been the type to break up a happy couple. I'm not looking to start now.
Besides, Pepper scares him,
Steve added, still patting away.
Shut up, Rogers.
It's okay,
Tony said, as he sat up and ran his hands through his hair.
She scares me, too.
He drained one of his mugs, regrouping, and Steve and James each drank some more water. Watching over the top of her journal, Jane had to admit that Darcy had been right. James Barnes drinking from a bottle like that was downright indecent. That was when Darcy stumbled in, of course. Her hair was a mess, her eyes were barely open, and she was wearing sushi print pajama pants. Her gaze fell on James, with his head tipped back and his throat working, and she stopped in the doorway to stare. Jane could not blame her at all. Steve nodded politely.
Darcy.
Tony, sitting with his back to the door, sat bolt upright.
Darcy, of course.
James slowly lowered his bottle and fixed Darcy with an assessing look. Jane sank lower in her chair, hoping general relativity and gravitation would shield her. Darcy blinked and slowly took in the three men, the poem on the notice board, and what that might mean. Then she blushed dark crimson right to the roots of her hair, and fled from the room. There was a short silence.
Well,
Tony said, twisting in his chair to stare after her retreating form.
That answers that.
Guess so,
said Steve, staring at James. James didn't say a word. Instead, he recapped his water bottle and set it on the table. Then he stood, gave his sweatshirt a sniff, and pulled it over his head, leaving it draped on the now vacant chair. Jane noted with no surprise at all that he wasn't wearing anything underneath. Finally, he pulled a peony from the vase on the counter and tucked it behind one ear. His hips had a little extra swagger to them as he made for the door. Everyone watched him go. New text message. Darcy Lewis. I hate you so much right now. Faithless backstabbing wench. A plague on your house, Jane Foster.
Jane Foster. Shrug emoji.
Oh shit, he's at the door! Jane turned the page and started in on an article about pulsars. Her phone did not buzz again. End of chapter 1. Chapter 2. Post-credits scene. Darcy practically flew back to her suite and slammed the door. Then she locked it, leaned up against it, and slowly slid to the ground. Holy mother of fucksticks! God's benighted bloody fuckity fucking balls! She wasn't ready for this. She hadn't even had any coffee yet. She slid her phone out of her sweater pocket, engaged caps lock, and proceeded to tell Jane exactly how she felt. The device buzzed in her hands a few seconds later, while she was trying to think of more synonyms for treacherous. New text message.
Jane Foster. Shrug emoji.
Darcy burned with a fresh wave of rage. I taught her that, she muttered in betrayal, and thumped her head back against the door a few times to see if that would help. The door knocked back. Darcy froze, employing the old hold still and hope it goes away strategy. The knock came again.
Darcy, I'm pretty sure you're in there. You want to open up?
The voice was a little gravelly, but still pleasant, alive with humor. Darcy sent one last panicked text, then reverted to the old, hope the floor opens up and swallows you strategy.
I'm just going to recite poetry at you till you open the door, then.
The voice cleared its throat.
Oh, Darcy doll, Darcy doll, whither art thou, Darcy doll? Deny thy shyness and forsake thy room.
It was a fine voice, clear and carrying, and carefully enunciated. It had a grit to it, like it was more used to battlefield communication than oratory, but it had obviously once been well-trained. Choir boy, maybe? Ooh, choir boy.
Or, if thou wilt not.
Ah, fine! Darcy yanked the door open before she had to hear what came next. What? Unfortunately, that's when her eyes caught up. James Barnes stood in her doorway, with his hair in a messy ponytail, and a pink flower tucked behind one ear. He was wearing dangerously low-slung sweatpants, and nothing else. His skin, so much skin, glistened slightly, as if he'd been working up a sweat. Of course, Darcy thought. She had a moment of dizzying confusion as her idle choir boy fantasy ran smack into her half-naked super soldier fantasy and made real good friends. She had a sudden urge to cross herself. She wasn't even Catholic. Focus, Lewis. She dragged her eyes back up to James's face by sheer force of will. He smirked at her, knowing. What? She said again. Do you want?
I wanted to ask you if you'd let me take you out for dinner sometime.
Darcy narrowed her eyes. Is that a euphemism?
No, ma'am.
The, not unless you'd like it to be, was implied, Darcy supposed. As she watched, though, James's posture changed, becoming more open. Darcy had been looked at by James before. She knew he was capable of making her feel prickly hot and too small for her skin with just a lingering glance. But this was different. He ducked his head, watched her from beneath those ridiculous lashes. His eyes were warm and hopeful, and the small crinkles at the corners matched the way his lips curved up, ever so slightly. His bare shoulders rose and fell in a small, silent sigh, and he bit his bottom lip. Darcy burst out laughing. Seriously? She asked, when she could speak again. His expression blossomed into a full, bright smile at her laugh. And oh, she could stand to see that again. Then resolved into something more sober.
Seriously?
You're not making fun of me? Or feeling sorry for me? Or asking because you think I'll be easy?
No, ma'am.
This time, Darcy thought, James was in earnest. He'd straightened up, and his hands were hanging open at his sides, in a loose approximation of attention. Why then? The smile crept back.
You have good taste in pajama pants,
he said slowly, one eyebrow raised.
And you've got great literary references.
Darcy rolled her eyes.
And because I'd really like to get to know you better,
James finished, looking genuinely unguarded for once. He went to tuck a stray lock of hair behind his ear, seemed surprised to find the flower there, and held it out to her. She took his offering. The flower was palest pink, its petals just beginning to unfurl from a tight spherical bud. There was a light sweet scent, and a hint of something like spearmint that must have been from James's shampoo. Pick me up at 8, she decided, and tucked the flower into her own wild nest of curls. That earned her the bright smile again, and Darcy felt a dizzy swirl of vertigo as she watched him relax and turn to go. The no-shirt look was seriously working for him. There was something niggling at her, though. Wait. James paused halfway down the hall.
Yeah?
He said over one shoulder, his expression weary. Darcy narrowed her eyes. Darcy, doll?
Makes a scan better,
he told her, and shot her an easy wink.
Doll?
Darcy scoffed in indignation, but James was already sauntering down the hall, with a swagger to his hips, and his arms stretched overhead for maximum effect. Darcy definitely watched him go. End of story. Thanks for listening.